It is Saturday, November 1st, 2008, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, the Week in Geek News. In the second half, your questions and comments of technology. Oh, and today, as previously mentioned, thumb wrestling for old gear.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on the program, we're going to be talking about, we're going to do some thumb wrestlings for some gear that we brought in. We're going to be covering geek news. And in the second half, you're welcome to call us up with questions and comments about technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can use the internet right now and send us a note. We just might not answer it on air. If you call, though, in the second half, we'll probably pick up the phone. Again, the phone numbers I'll give out in about a half an hour, and we're going to invite your participation. So this is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, I have geeks. Let's see. Sean Cleveland, Senior Technical Marketing Manager at NVIDIA. Morning.
Good morning. It's funny, you announced me first and I'm the last one here.
Well, you brought my coffee.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. It's magic. Without you, I wouldn't be talking a mile a minute, so thank you very much. We also have Miles Elam. He's a student, programmer, and political junkie. Good morning, Miles.
Always a pleasure.
It is?
Yes.
All right, good. We have Ben Jaffe. Ben is a freelance media dude. He brought a video camera today. We'll be posting a little bit of behind the scenes at some point on the GeekSpeak website.
Usually a pleasure.
Oh, how about today?
Well, yeah, today, yeah. Today.
Today you've got competition. You're going to have to thumb wrestle Drew. We have Drew Meyer in the house. Oh,
where?
Oh, wait. He's not here. Which means the thumb wrestling is going to have to be a little confusing, but we'll figure that out in a minute. We also have John Tracy. Now, John Tracy is tech support at Acceleon. John, morning.
Morning.
It's hard not to see you. We have a big screen in our way. So if I can move that without breaking anything. Oh, good.
And I can see your chin.
Yeah, nice. Well, there you go. Hi. So, John, you recently were clearing out the gear in your... Let's see if we're still on air.
We're experiencing technical difficulties.
Okay.
That was bad. So... You just dropped a monitor on the board here.
Me. Yeah. All right, so John, you recently cleaning out your garage of gear, and you found a whole bunch of nifty stuff that's on the piano behind Sean.
Yes.
And you sent a list out to the geeks, and none of us responded except Drew and Ben both want the same thing. So we decided the only real rational, fair thing to do is have them thumb wrestle for it.
I got to it first, though.
Well, that's the thing. You did respond first.
Because my fingers are glued to my keyboard, and, well, actually, that wouldn't be very practical, but
which makes really it hard to thumb wrestle.
All I got to say is possession is 9/10 of the law, right?
But the thing is, we've been promising people a thumb wrestling event here on KOSP, on GeekSpeak.
Yeah. Tune in
and with
to,
Drew not here.
To our video feed? Oh, wait, we don't have a video feed.
No, you just have to put your thumbs close enough to the mic and it works fine. So is anyone willing to stand in for Drew to compete with Ben on thumb wrestling?
Defending Drew's honor?
No, well, about the stuff? So
all I know is I'm old and busted and he's got reflexes and youth on me.
Yeah,
and yeah,
but
I don't you cheat.
And I don't need a print server. I already beat you. That's true.
Yeah, then I beat you back by cheating in the same way.
What do you guys do, stomping each other's toes or something?
And I beat you back? What are you, 12?
No, he teaches
at... L-O-L, yes.
No, he teaches at Stanford.
Not anymore.
No, he taught 12-year-olds at Stanford. Let's be clear.
9 to 13-year-olds.
So, Miles, I know of you are actually, you like competition. You're a good thumb wrestler. What do you say? You want to thumb wrestle Ben?
Well, I know that I would not be a match for Ben on a normal day.
Yes.
However, I haven't trimmed my nails in a while, so I have a little bit of a handicap, you know, taken care of there. So
can I wear gloves?
No.
No, this is going to be a regulation thumb wrestling match.
Yeah, I think
so. There's no thumb gouging. Sorry, Miles.
Oh, what are you talking
wait,
about?
Wait, what is regulation? Can right. you do like so, side swiping?
Wait, yeah, you're just making that up as you go along.
In just 20 minutes, we will do a thumb wrestling contest for all the gear on top of the piano.
I brought the octagon, the thumb wrestling octagon.
Oh my gosh, what that is? It looks like a CD. Seriously, it's the size
but
of
it's
a
an
CD.
Octagon,
and it's got two holes cut out thumbs. In it for thumbs.
And what
it's
is it
about as comfortable as sticking your thumb through a CD?
It's called the
Oh, no, no, don't. It's a freebie from a company.
Okay, there's a tagline at the bottom, though, that says something.
Rule your office with an iron thumb.
Yes, there we go, iron thumb. All right, so iron thumb competition in 18 minutes.
You got to be careful, Iron Chef. They might sue us.
No, iron and thumb are not copyrighted.
Oh, okay. Whew.
And the news for the week. We'll start with John.
Sony has upped their battery recall to 100,000 batteries. This is affecting laptops made by Hewlett-Packard, Toshiba, and Dell. If you've got a Hewlett-Packard laptop that was purchased from December 2004 through June 2006, a Toshiba laptop purchased from April 2005 to October 2005, or a Dell that was purchased between November 2004 and November 2005, go to your manufacturer's website. We've posted all the manufacturer's website, or we'll have posted all the manufacturer's websites up on geekspeak.com. So if you're curious to see...
Geekspeak.org.
Oh, I say calm.
You did.
Oh, man.
I still love you, but you did say that.
I owe someone a coffee now.
How long have you been doing this show?
8 years.
But he has kids.
So we will post the websites that you can go up to see
is that
if
Sony recalls more laptop batteries.
They're not up there yet. I'll do that. We'll do it after the show.
They're up there now. Good job.
No, well, not all three. The Dell one is up there.
The general thing, what are they going to do? They're going to give you a new battery for your old 1995 computer.
It depends on the manufacturer, but yeah, they should be able to ship you a new battery. You'll have to ship in your old one. They'll give you a new one, which if you purchased your laptop, in 2004 is a good deal for you. You're getting a replacement.
Brand new laptop, really, and that's one of the things
that does. Not laptop, battery.
I mean battery. The thing is, 2004, a laptop in 2004, anybody still using those?
Apparently, because they're catching on fire. There have been reports of fires.
I am.
You are?
Yeah.
Is that machine in front of you 4 years old?
Pretty much.
It's not, is it? You're lying to me, I can tell.
No, it's... I've had it for over 3 years.
Yeah.
Three and a half?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
But it's not one of the models, so you're good. All right, so the laptop battery could theoretically explode on you now.
It hasn't exploded yet. I mean,
John, is that right?
I'm edging away.
Yeah, the curious thing about lithium ion.
I thought it was only the lithium. Yeah, this is not a lithium ion battery.
Okay.
Yeah, the curious thing about lithium ion batteries is that they're a chemical fire. They are...
Electrical fire.
Electrical fire.
So get your type 3
fire. And they could be on your lap at the time that it happens.
No, there's another type. I'm sorry, I've forgotten, though. Basically, your...
Material fire.
Yeah, your fire extinguisher will not stop it. You basically
have to... If you have a type 3 extinguisher, it will.
I love the... there's a video online about the guy who was at a conference and his notebook caught on fire. And everybody sat there watching it, and it burned, phosphorescent burn.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's the thing. Like, you can't put water on it.
No.
Water would be a really bad thing because
it's electrical.
It's a salt. No, it's...
and it's electrical.
Go on.
Or it's an alkali
metal.
Lithium.
It's
an alkali metal.
Yeah.
And so you can't... Basically, if one of these things does start to burn, go away. Like, don't... Don't try
just
to
walk away,
put it
calmly
out. Yeah, just move
but
away
try,
from
try
it.
Not, try to put everything else out that it catches on top of.
We are really scaring people.
You know what?
Modern lithium-ion batteries don't have these kinds of issues.
That's something I want to point out here. These are all ones made before 2006. In 2006, Sony changed the manufacturing process of how they make lithium-ion batteries, and they have not had these problems with
the biggest problem with lithium-ion batteries is that there's a finite amount of lithium in the world. And we're in danger of using it.
You know? And don't throw out batteries in general. You got to recycle batteries.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's the good thing though is that after your battery stops working, you can still recycle it, and they can recycle that lithium.
Yes, as long as people do that,
because the lithium isn't going anywhere; it's just changing form within the battery.
Yeah,
so. John, you actually had a little thing about. Let's see. So the deal is that Sony's saying we're recalling more, and Dell also has a program. So we're basically setting up all the links for the different kinds of manufacturers. Basically, if you've got a laptop made by Dell, go to Dell's website, look at your model number. They're going to have information on it and so on with any laptop you have in that range of like 2003 to 2006, somewhere in there. So thank you very much, John, for that, scaring us a little bit.
Of course.
No, he was just informing. I was the one scaring.
Okay.
But seriously, if you do have a fire like that, a type 3 fire extinguisher will put it out.
It will? It encases it or something?
I don't think it puts it out. It's the chemical it uses. Well, okay. It's the lithium reaction that's going out.
It's fun. It's always fun on Geekspeak when we get into an area that we don't have expertise on and people realize, they're not that smart. let's go to Ben. Ben, your first news story, sir.
So this week, Google has announced that its web crawler, which crawls documents on the web to index them for searching, can now search scanned documents can actually scan the text of scanned documents using OCR, which is optical character recognition.
So it's part of their image crawling. They look at images.
Yeah. So
OCR algorithm.
So like a really good use of this would be, for example, academic papers, which a lot of times aren't actually there in their text. They're just scanned in. And then with this technology, which actually isn't new, it's been around for a very long time. But I mean, you know, Google is doing this on a very, very massive scale, and you know, doing that kind of conversion is a lot of processing power. So I don't know, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, they must just have a bunch of cycles to burn in this case.
Yeah, well, they're Google.
They're Google.
Well, yeah, but I mean, even Google is going to be limited by their resources. They're going to...
No, Google has infinite... They're omnipotent as well. That's why.
Okay.
No, anyway.
But yeah, I mean, I could see them also being I/O bound, like trying to make sure their hard drives can get the output,
yeah.
But their CPUs may not be fully utilized.
Yeah. That's a good point. That is a good
point. So I was just looking it up, John. It's a Class D. Class D fires involve combustible materials such as magnesium, titanium, potassium, and sodium, and so on. And these materials burn at high temperatures and will react voluntarily with water, air, and or other chemicals.
Violently, yes.
Violently, excuse me. So the thing is, a fire extinguisher, to put those out, you'd have to break the material up because it's
the reaction's still going.
So maybe it totally encases it in something that's completely neutral.
It says the heat from the fire causes the sodium chloride to cake into a crust. So it
cool.
reduces the air that goes in, and it dissipates the heat from the burning metal.
So that's a class 3.
No, that's a class. You're right. It's class D. I'm sorry.
Well,
I was thinking
D
there's
fire.
Three classes of fire extinguishers, but there's actually a class D as well.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. And it uses
sodium chloride. Fire is a class D. Anyway, you need to have a fire extinguisher that handles class D. Pretty interesting stuff. I didn't know you could stop one of those things. I always thought of it as like this runaway thing.
But, well, what you're doing is you're interrupting the chemical reaction that's causing the fire.
Right, right. All right. Sean.
Well, we all know that the economic downturn has hurt a lot of industries.
Mm-hmm. We can call it a recession now. NPR told us we can call it a recession now.
Okay.
Oh, well, if NPR said it, actually, that's scary. Did they really?
Yeah.
So Intel warned that chip demand is going to be lower. This is kind of, you know, cause for, you know, serious reflection here. There's a big chip company.
Yeah.
Like Intel.
And they're saying it's going to be low demand.
Yeah. So Intel's one of the largest producers of microprocessors, we all know. And their revenues were down when they gave their fourth quarter earnings. And they gave a lower outlook, too. Well, TSMC, Taiwan Semiconductor, who is the largest chip maker of graphics chips. They make AMD's chips, NVIDIA chips, ATI chips, you know.
They're like a construction group. Right?
Yeah, they fab chips. They actually make the chips that go into these devices and cards. They have said that they expect 20% lower sales in the fourth quarter or earnings. And Chartered Semiconductor, which is another large semiconductor that makes chips, these are both third-party companies. They've also said 20% sequentially. What they're saying is reduced orders. They saw a decline of orders in August and customer requests to reschedule deliveries moving forward. So, yeah, 20% in the PC market. Or
yeah,
just in general.
And,
really
and looking at the chip level makes sense. It's the earlier parts of the pipeline of out to product. So it's in the manufacturing pipeline. Things are slowing down now.
Yeah.
We'll see less computers coming out.
So I'm wondering, is this the reason why I recently saw an ad for 4 gigs of RAM for like $45?
Oh, I cannot believe how low.
I mean, admittedly, DDR2, and it wasn't the fastest speed of DDR2,
yeah.
But still, 4 gigs for...
So I just met with a friend of mine, Robert Pierce, who is works at Corsair Memory, mm-hmm. and he is hot to come on this show.
Okay.
So we can talk about memory and these cyclical trends and the who makes the actual chips and how are they different?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh yeah, I'm interesting. Because all these
companies
you hear,
to
like,
talk about
all
there.
The companies you hear that actually make that ship you the product, the chips themselves can vary from different manufacturers.
Yeah. So so we're gonna have Corsair on soon.
Okay.
And we'll talk about just that, Miles, that kind of stuff.
And how cheap it is. And the other thing that Miles is saying, that because of the inexpensiveness of RAM, if you're doing any kind of... If you don't have 4 gigs in your computer, you should.
Yeah,
if you've got Vista,
if you do
time.
Not yet, yeah.
Yeah, if you don't yet, you should go buy it.
It's a good way to get more performance out of your system without having to do a major upgrade.
Yeah.
It's literally just popping it open and replacing the memory.
Right. If you have something like 512 megs of RAM and you
upgrade to this. Oh, you definitely need an upgrade.
Mm-hmm. It would be like having a brand new computer to you.
Yeah, go spend $50-$60. You'll be very happy.
No, in this case, $45.
Like, yeah. It's 4 gigs ridiculous. For $45 is crazy.
Thanks for the clarity, 45, not 50. That helps.
Well, you're saying 50 or 60, and I'm saying it's
And you know what? With DDR2 memory, you don't need fast memory. You know,
really?
You'll see 800 megahertz memory. You'll see 1066, you know, even up to 1333 megahertz memory. Don't spend a lot of money on the fast.
Right, for DDR2.
DDR2, it's all about latency. So you'll see a CAS number. So you'll see CAS 7, CAS 6, CAS 5. The lower that number, the faster the memory is going to be.
Oh, interesting.
And when you boot your system, look at the first screen that comes up. It's called the post screen, and see what the settings are. And then look at what's printed on the memory module. And those are what you really want to be running at.
Okay.
And if you have questions, shoot an email, and I can explain this stuff. Tell me what motherboard you have, and I'll tell you what you need to do to get the settings.
Very cool.
It's really easy. It's not that hard. But if you're running DDR3 memory, then memory speed makes a difference.
It's a totally different situation.
Yeah. So if you're running at 1066, 1066 megahertz memory, go to 1333 if you can. If you can go to 1600 megahertz, that's the place to be.
You're talking about like a brand new machine.
Yeah, that makes Windows. I don't know. There's something that's the sweet spot between 1333 and 1600, or even 1800. I don't know. Windows becomes fast,
usable.
It's crazy. It's amazing. Cool.
Thank you, Mitch, very much for that. Let's go to Miles, the next news story. Let me just say one thing. That was Sean Cleveland. We also have Ben Jaffe and John Tracy. I'm Lyle Troxell, and now Miles Elam with the next news story.
Ubuntu 8.10 has been released. I say this with some fanfare because I've downloaded it and ran it. It's the first Linux release that works unmodified on a Mac. I was able to boot off the live CD, and everything worked, including my Bluetooth mouse.
Wow, even your screen? Your screen is broken.
Yeah, but my external screen works just fine.
Very cool.
So, I mean, that's...
What's Ubuntu?
Ubuntu is a distribution of Linux, the free operating system.
Okay, good.
Yeah, operating system would be like Mac OS X is an operating system, Windows is an operating system. Linux is technically a kernel, so the whole...
Right, everything that repackages the core of Linux into distributions of operating systems.
Right. Mm-hmm. And
Ubuntu's kind of our favorite?
It is my personal favorite. Let's go around the room.
I've used Ubuntu quite a bit, and I like it. I don't run it as a primary OS.
Personally, I prefer OS X, but as a
Macintosh
server...
Macintosh OS X. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Macintosh OS X, but as a server, I prefer Ubuntu.
Me too.
I'd say Ubuntu.
Yeah, that's what I would use. I mean, boot the CD and start using the OS.
Mm-hmm. Right away.
It's incredible. Cool.
Yeah. And then it'll install as you're using it. And then it'll transfer everything that you've done to your new... It's just so cool.
If you want to get out of the paying for your operating system, Ubuntu is
And OpenOffice supports it, right?
Yeah, OpenOffice. Yeah. I think OpenOffice is...
OpenOffice, what is it, 9? The new version of OpenOffice.
I hear the new version is nice. Incredible.
Yes, it is.
It broke download records.
It did.
As a heavy Word user, I'd love to see what you thought of OpenOffice. Like, actually ran it.
You should give it
a shot. John, what about you?
We use Ubuntu and CentOS, but Ubuntu for a server, definitely.
I can barely hear you. Your mic close to your face?
Sorry. Yes, okay. Ubuntu. I also like Edubuntu, which is an educational version they've got with a bunch of free software for educational stuff.
Yeah, if you don't specifically like Ubuntu, there's also other flavors like Zubuntu, which is a more lightweight version, Kubuntu, which is a different windowing manager, Edubuntu, as you were mentioning, which is education.
But the base level Ubuntu, if you want to try it out and stuff, works. And if you've got a kid you want to give a computer to, Edubuntu makes a lot of sense because it's got a whole bunch of educational stuff in it.
Anybody know OpenOffice, the quality of the PDF conversion? It's got that capability, right? Save as PDF?
I don't know. I've only ever used it on a Macintosh, and Macintosh, everything you can save as PDF by printing. So
we always install Qt PDF.
In Ubuntu?
In Ubuntu. No, I don't know.
Curious, because that would be a showstopper for me.
Right, you've got to be on PDFs, right?
Well, I'll work together with you on that, and we can see what the desktop is like what features it has and whether it's a good migration path.
By the way, OpenOffice 3 is the new version, not 9, as I said.
They're making it simpler on the naming convention. So they went from like 5, 6, 7, and now they're at 3.
Yes.
Perfect. I love it when they do that.
Just in my head.
Just in case you're not confused.
There's so many software packages.
But they're not,
so many different numbers.
They're not just free as in terms of price, like you don't have to pay for them, but they're also free in that the source code is available, which means that if there's any problems or any tweaks, other people can contribute to it. It's one of the powers of these bits of software.
There's a great story Excuse me. Oh, my gosh. There's a great story at...
Sean suddenly became an 80-year-old man. Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like that. There's a great story at Ars Technica, which is a site I really love.
Wonderful site.
And it's, you know, the art of technology, Ars Technica. They have a story called The Call of Cthubuntu.
Of Cthubuntu?
Yeah.
Like Cthulhu of Ubuntu?
Like Lovecraft's Call of Cthulhu, but it's The Call of Cthubuntu. And it's really good. You got to go up and check it out.
All right. Well,
maybe we'll put a link on.
Can
the
you
Geek
post
Speak
on? Side, yeah. Next news story, I think.
It's time for Day of the Dead.
Oh yes, today is Day of the Dead. That's true. All right, Miles, you got another one? I know you. I just had you, but let's have another one from you.
Well, the iPhone has a new application available to it that I found fairly exciting.
Go on.
Google Earth for the iPhone. So I've played around with it.
So if you haven't played with Google Earth, it's amazing. Does it work like that on the iPhone?
It looks exactly like the desktop version, where you're zooming into an area. It's coming up. It probably can't have as many plugins as you do for the desktop version. And I haven't played with it that extensively. But the graphics look exactly the same. It's amazing.
So I have a question. Have you played with it? I've been playing with Google Earth on the Mac, and there's some inconsistencies in the UI that I dislike a lot. Whereas in Windows, it's a lot more polished. How does it work on the iPhone? Are there any major inconsistencies?
On the iPhone, you're touching the screen to slide mm-hmm. back and forth, to move around, pinching and stretching to zoom in, zoom out. Actually, by tilting the iPhone, it'll change your point of view to get closer to a horizon
nice.
Line.
Wow.
About pitch and roll.
Yeah.
It's just
if you're trying to make it, if you're looking straight down or if you're looking at an oblique angle.
No kidding. That's kind of cool.
Looking toward the ground, toward the horizon.
Wow. That's
so.
You're blowing my mind.
As far as that's concerned, that was interesting. And if you press the icon in the bottom left-hand corner, it will zoom in or target from where you are. So zoom in from orbit to where you are at that time.
Oh, that's nice.
Wow. How slow is it, though?
I'm installing it right
it's
now.
It's slower than the desktop version. I mean, the iPhone doesn't have the same CPU power as a desktop machine does.
That's the biggest problem with Google Earth. You really see a difference on
but
based
it's
on the
it was surprisingly mm-hmm. smooth for a handheld device.
Oh wow.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's that time. We need to do a contest.
Wait, there's one more story I want to do.
Go ahead.
I thought it was really interesting. NPR, it wants to identify voting problems. So they've created Twitter and text from your phone. You can actually send Twitter or text messages when you're having voter if you're in line and you see something going on there's
cool.
an issue.
That's wonderful.
Well, they also have an iPhone app that is really kind of neat. It's called Vote Report, and you go to npr.org/vote-report, and you can download this, put it on your iPhone. And you can send an issue, and it uses the GPS to give them the coordinates of where you are and where
cool.
the issue's happening.
It's called Vote Report.
Yeah.
I'll install that next.
Now that I think of it, it might be a good idea for geeks that are out there to choose the electronic voting machine. Because of the people have the worries about it, the risks involved there. As I think about it more, geeks will be able to recognize when there are problems more easily than people who don't or are not as comfortable with computers.
I would disagree because I think that, I mean, you're kind of looking at, you can't see anything on the back end. You're just looking at this graphical interface. So, I mean...
On the contrary, when something goes wrong, if you press on something and it does a vote switch, anyone could notice that. Anyone could see that and you have to go to verify, right.
Say the touchscreen malfunction.
But if there was a problem and then a poll worker had to go and fix it or some person who was involved with the company had to come and fix it, you would, as a geek, you'd probably have a better idea of saying, wait a second, they're doing what?
Right,
what are they?
Right.
Wait, what are they opening up right now? What's?
I think my perspective on it is to avoid the electronic voting machines completely.
I think so, too.
And just use the paper. I mean, no, it's going to get scanned anyway, but at least there's a trail.
I guess I'm thinking in terms of those districts where there are only electronic voting machines. There aren't very many in California, especially after the Secretary of State of California, I love her, actually made her made a mandate based upon actual evaluation, unlike some other areas. But if you're out of California, if you have to use an electronic voting machine in your precinct, I prefer a geek was able to sit there and be able to identify what was going on, to be able to have an intelligent
Miles,
conversation.
Miles, are you saying geek the vote? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Okay, that was really lame.
GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. Okay, Miles, you're going to get up from the mic and go over to Ben and wrestle. Or we can do this virtually. We're going to pretend we're doing it.
I can just sit here and grunt. That would make good radio.
We just have John Tracy call in.
But who's going to win?
John's right there.
Oh, sorry, not John. Never mind.
Miles,
go on. Sean, you need to go ahead.
Andrew?
Yeah, go ahead. Sean, you do it.
No.
Wrestle Ben.
I did. I beat him. Why would I want to give up that record?
I've already talked about it. Like, I have the deadly claws of unclipped fingernails that are going to shed blood the whole thing.
How about we have John thumb wrestle him? To
I
see
want
if,
my own stuff.
You got to keep your... just put it back where you had it.
I brought it all in to get rid of it.
You see what I deal with here every day? I'm not in control. Not at all. We are now taking your calls with questions and comments about technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800. Or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. And if you'd like to send us email or participate in our forums, you're welcome to do that anytime you'd like at geekspeak.org. The geeks this morning are Ben Jaffe, John Tracy, Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, and I am Mr. Lyle Troxell. Moving on. I think we'll start taking calls. Is that appropriate, or does somebody want to talk about voting again?
I've got a brief story.
Is it about how you didn't win thumb wrestling today? Go on.
He won. He showed up.
It's true. Okay.
That's true.
I think it's official.
Forfeits. Yeah.
No one stood in for Drew to thumb wrestle you, so you win, and you get to take all the stuff on top of the piano.
Ah. Cool.
Yay. Oh, except for that.
what was that?
It's something John wants to keep.
Slowly things will disappear behind my back. See, I can't see the gear, so I can't keep an eye on it.
So the print server looks like a block of cheese. That's been
No, that's the video splitter.
Oh, video splitter.
It's a video splitter.
What does video splitter
with
have
serial
to do with
ports?
Cheese?
Nothing.
It's not serial ports.
They just had some fun. No.
What is that?
It's video ports, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a DB9 in.
Uh-huh.
Which means a DB15 VGA.
Yeah, VGA, SVGA.
So you pipe your computer monitor through this little piece of cheese, and it spits out composite.
So I
got to
take my 30-inch screen and then go down to single link DVI and lose half my resolution.
DVI wouldn't go. I mean,
why would you go through that?
Probably
cheese
XVGA is the highest resolution that they can handle. But it's very cool.
This
to
was purchased in 2001.
Is so. Ben gonna get that?
Right. Ben has it.
Can I arm wrestle him for it?
No, it's not mine. You have to talk to Ben about all this.
Ben, can I arm wrestle you for it?
Two thumbs enter, one thumb leave.
Sean is holding up the octagon thing.
Get over here.
That thing's claustrophobic. I don't know about that thing.
Get over here, Lyle.
I can't do. I gotta do the thing with the
Miles
board.
Miles can do the board. Come on, get over here.
I can't hear if I go over there. Okay, we're going to talk to Mary Ellen from Santa Cruz. Mary Ellen, welcome to Geek Speak.
Sorry about that.
Let's try that again, Mary.
Hi, this is Mary Ellen. Just a quickie. I'm a poll worker in Santa Cruz County.
Cool.
Official title: electronic voting specialist.
Ooh.
And just to tell you, no, I'm not the person that slips in the
doctor
chip, but rather in Santa Cruz County, when you vote electronically, you get a paper copy of your vote, and when you're entering in, you enter in whatever you're voting for, this person and this whatever. And then you have an option, in the process, you print this paper ballot, and you can take a look at that, and you go, oh, well, there's a screw-up. You're standing right there, you can cancel it and start over.
Cool. Now, you don't get to keep that paper, right? That actually goes in a box.
Yeah, it's proof of your voting.
I thought that one of the problems with giving a paper proof to show actually what your vote was is that you then could theoretically sell your vote because there's proof about that.
No, you could keep it. And if you want information, just search Google, search Santa Cruz County Election Office.
Santa Cruz County Election Office, okay.
You know, you kind of scroll through, there's the election department, and then you go through information, choices, information for voters, and then there you scroll through that and you...
Well, you know what we'll do is
there's one called touchscreen voting instructions, so it's all really there.
Hear that, like, Alex is talking to us in an instant message right now, and he says, you know, the biggest flaw with voting machines has to do with processing the recorded data. And then even when you get a receipt, what good is that? Mm-hmm. You know, you have no way of validating.
Actually, what's in the system?
Yeah, you have no way of validating whether it was actually counted or not.
But at least there is a paper version in
case. Yeah, the paper, right?
But the paper doesn't really give you anything.
Well, that's kind of no different than you have an optical scanning. I mean,
right.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
In some ways, because you still have a large data set.
The whole issue was the whole issue about these things is to have a paper version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the call.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye. Bye. That was Mary Ellen from Santa Cruz. She is a volunteer. Ballot worker that actually focuses on electronic voting. So that's very cool.
Now, briefly, what would be really nice is if you could actually see the paper trail go by in a little clear window, and that way you could verify that.
What she's saying is you get a print with your vote on it.
Oh, you do.
It's very strange to me that you'd be able to then sell that. I thought you couldn't do that. I thought that you had to get a copy, then you could see it, and then they had to keep it. Which seems to make more sense to me. But in any case, having a printout makes a lot of sense. And what we're basically saying is that, yes, you've got a printout of what your vote is, and theoretically that gets to add to a database in the machine. And at some point, the database could be managed, you know, changed. And it could be changed after you get the printed version. So it's not perfect in that sense. If they kept those printed versions and everyone had a printed version and there was a request for a recount, you'd be able to rescan it, which would be kind of cool.
That'd be really nice if this software was open source. So the code could actually be reviewed by...
Means something like P-Vote, which we covered last week. In case you want to check the archives of GeekSpeak, there's the actual software that Ben is suggesting there.
Sorry about that.
No, don't apologize. I think more people should know about it and participate with it.
If they just elected the people I wanted, it wouldn't be an issue.
And line two.
What a way to look at it.
We're going to talk to Aya from Boulder Creek. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you so much. I love your show. And I want to buy a scanner, but also that it can take 35-millimeter film and other large format, and that it has to be iMac compatible. What do you suggest?
So you're looking for a large format scanner.
With 35-millimeter support.
Oh, for 35-millimeter
film. Yeah.
Film. But you also want to be able to scan larger things?
Yeah, my father had a lot of negatives that are larger. I don't know. I think they're called...
anything larger than 8.5 by 11... add serious money onto the price of a scanner.
Oh, but I meant the negatives.
Oh, negatives.
Okay.
So we were talking about large format, like a Hasselblad kind of.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah. So the transparency is larger. There are flatbed scanners that have backlights on them, and you can load film into them. And most of those, because it's not that much more difficult to make it larger, will have an ability to fill it in. I don't have model numbers off of you, but the thing is, scanning film or slides, the best way to do it is to get a slide scanning unit that actually only fits 35-millimeter slides or negatives. And so that doesn't help you with the Hasselblad issue. I think I would take that.
Scanners come with a template,
yeah.
Right, that you can put your film into.
Yeah.
What about using a service?
That's what I was going to say.
Is this just for your father's old images?
Well, I used to be a photojournalist, and I have a lot of negatives, but also for my father's stuff.
So would you prefer to have something yourself, or is this something you could take to a service and have them do for a one-time fee?
I'd rather have it for myself.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there's a flatbed scanner that I've got at work, and I have tried using it as a transparency scanner, and it's functional. I don't think it will fit a 4x, whatever the Hasselblad backing size is. So it's going to be a difficult thing to look at.
One sad truth, though, about this is... any digital media that you scan this into is going to be probably less safe or less good for archival purposes than the original negatives. Like the format you have it in right now is actually pretty good.
But if she wants to use it for anything, she
that's
needs
true.
To get
yeah,
a computer.
I just want to kind of print stuff out instead of going to Costco's and having them print it out.
Well, I have the same problem. I've got my father's collection of negatives and slides of over 60,000 photos.
Mm.
And what do you do with that? You know, I don't know. Actually, 40,000, excuse me. I don't know what you do with that. My solution is that I do have a scanner, and every once in a while I'll spend some time scanning. I don't have that problem with Hasselblad sizes. How much of this is that large format negative?
He's got a lot, and a lot of it's like 1930s in New York.
Wow.
It's really beautiful stuff. But actually, I'm more concerned. My mother can spend her money on that, but I'm more concerned with the 35-millimeter. Do you think Epson is a good model?
Epson and Canon both make scanners that'll handle these.
And Nikon makes good slide scanners. The best slide scanner out right now is the Nikon, and it's like a cart. It's like looks like a toaster, a small toaster kind of, and you load in the film in the front, and they've got even automatic loaders. I would recommend that unit because it's really good. But
that's
really,
like $1,500.
Oh, it's very expensive. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're talking
about
an expensive
more
machine.
Like $500.
Then you're going to do a flatbed scanner with a backlight, and Epson's going to be – I mean, the real trick about this is what you want to do is go up. I would use Amazon's feedback system and look at this. So go up to Amazon, look for flatbed scanners with backlights, see what people are saying and voting and reviewing them about, and that's where you're going to learn the details about the unit and if it's going to work for you.
And that's an Amazon?
Yeah, if you go to Amazon.com, I'm not saying you should buy from Amazon.com.
Oh, yeah, no, I know.
Yeah, just start searching there and see what people are talking about and how they review the units and what the experience was. And you'll probably get pretty good feedback on which one's the best. Okay?
Okay. Thank you so much
for the call. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Very cool. Should we do another news story? Anybody got something we want to really hot? Ben?
Sure. Donald, how do you pronounce it, Miles? Newth?
Donald Newth, yes.
Donald Newth, who...
He's a beautiful code guy.
Yeah. He's
well, he's not so much about code. He's the true meaning of the term computer scientist. Computer scientists don't program, per se. They work out the algorithms for programmers to use.
Mm-hmm. But what's his name in his book?
It's, The Art of Computer Programming, Volumes 1, 2, 3, and now recently 4.
Oh, cool.
And so he's had this long-standing offer where if anyone spots an error in one of his books, then he'll send them a check for one hexadecimal dollar, which is $2.56. Also, he says that the quote on his website is, "It turns out that only 9 of the first 275 checks that I've sent out since the beginning of 2006 have actually been cashed. The others apparently have been cached, spelled C-A-C-H-E-D, as in
held.
Held.
True,
yes.
True. Right. Donald Newth is one of the top luminaries in the computer science community. I mean, from when computer science began. I mean, he's up there. So to get a check, a signed check from him is golden. To actually cash that check is kind of like having a rare stamp and then using that to mail a postcard to your aunt that you don't like very much.
He's paying out of the computer science department fund at Stanford University, according to the check.
Well, it makes sense,
actually.
I suppose
if they pay for an editor, it's cheaper for them to...
So they're paying for his mistakes, errors.
The rewrites, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, interesting. But anyway, so he has to kind of stop sending out checks because of... if you get one of these checks, as Miles said, it's like gold, you know? And so you have bragging rights. You can post it online and everything, which means that that check number is public. Anyone can see it. And so there have been some criminal attacks on his bank with people who have stolen the check number, the check numbers. And so anyway, he's decided instead of sending out more checks because it's causing trouble with his bank, he started a fictional bank called the Bank of Sans Serif, which is this page which lists the account balances of all of these people.
And by the way, that joke with regard to fonts is not all that odd. When he was first writing his books, there wasn't a good topographic system or typographical system for him to write his book in, so he wrote one. If any of you have ever heard of Tech or LaTeX, mm-hmm. that's Donald Newth. Yeah, that's the
spelled
guy.
Spelled T-E-X. Capital T.
You know, earlier on the show, before the show, we were talking about this guy, and I said, "Who's that?" And you looked at me with disdain and said, "And you call yourself a geek?" And it hurt. It really hurt, Miles. But now I know of him. I just didn't know his name. So in any case, very cool.
So yeah, this is pretty cool.
So fictitious bank. So if you do fix something and you send him a note, he'll actually add your balance to a fake bank you can mm-hmm. never withdraw the money mm-hmm. from.
But and it's listed in hex, of course.
Of course.
You know, 0x100.
All right, that's cool. Let's go to the next call. Actually, from Big Sur, Jim asked us a question off air. And he was suggesting an ATX scanner, an M1 scanner.
ARTX.
ARTX scanner. We'll do 35mm and larger format negatives. So there you go. So Microtext, is that the name of the manufacturer?
Microtext is the name of the manufacturer. ARTX Scan is
the scanning group
overall brand name, yeah.
And then M1 scanner.
Yeah, the M1.
So Jim from Big Sur suggests that, and I would trust it because he spent the time to send it.
Because M1 is a format. Would that be anyway.
Anyway, that's what you're going to look for. We'll go ahead and put that up on the website, too. And now that I said that, I've got to do it, right? All right, and let's go to line 3. Let's go to Santa Cruz. Cynthia, welcome to Geek Speak. Hello, Cynthia. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Yeah, I'm there.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just heard a caller call in that indicated she was an EVS, which is an electronic voting specialist in Santa Cruz. I'm a poll worker, and I'm what they call an inspector, and I manage EVS the EBS folks. And just for the record, you do not walk away with a piece of paper.
That's what I assumed. I'm so glad to hear confirmation on that. So you see a piece of paper, prints it out.
Correct.
And does everyone get it printed out? Do you definitely get a print? Does the printout come out of every time?
There's no printout.
Oh, there's no printout?
No. No. What it does is it shows it on the side. There's like a, I think it's thermal paper that rolls, and it shows what you have voted.
Okay.
And then you can confirm it.
So there is a paper print of your vote.
Yes.
It stays on the system.
Yeah.
Good. So if I wanted to retract my vote after looking at the print, is that possible?
Absolutely.
Okay, so I would say cancel, and then I'd start over, basically.
Well, actually, I'm trying to remember how that works, but I do know that until you actually cast your vote,
mm-hmm.
you can play around with what you have
voted. Your vote. But you can see a print as you go.
Correct.
Well, that sounds pretty cool. So the prints, are you planning on keeping those prints to possibly be able to do a recount?
Those are turned into the county.
Okay, so the county could theoretically do a recount off those paper prints.
That's correct.
Is that true for every voting machine in Santa Cruz County?
As far as I know.
And do you know about up and down the coast, like Monterey and Paso Robles?
I don't actually.
Okay, but that's interesting. I'd love to know if that's happening. Now, I don't know if you've heard about these endeavors to keep track from a population standpoint how the voting process is going. There's a few tools, online tools, where you can take your phone, you can text message in and kind of give feedback to the media, if you will, about what's actually happening at the poll locations. What about the responsibility of poll workers? Is there anything in the system to kind of record how long the lines are, how long times take? Do you know if there's any kind of structure of that form?
No, I mean we have our indexes for the precincts, and that gives us a total voter count
mm-hmm.
in terms of who can vote. And then we know how many people have come through to vote.
Right.
But we don't have any clue in terms of
how smooth
what's happened with the absent vote-by-mail folks and people that have voted early, et cetera. In terms of statistics at the poll, I don't think so. I know I don't keep any.
Yeah. Cynthia, thank you so much for calling up.
You're welcome.
Good luck on Tuesday.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Should we go to Paso Robles and find out what Ed is talking to us about? Ed from Paso Robles. Ed, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
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 Hi.
Yes, can you... I have an ancient computer with PCI slots. Can it use PCIe cards?
You have an ancient computer with PCIe slot?
PCI slots.
PCI. Is yeah, PCI, PCI the same as...
We still use PCI.
Right, the white slots.
Yeah.
Wait.
Can you buy a PCIe card
PCI Express.
Put it in one?
No. Those are two different standards. So PCI is the original connector that was used for graphics in the early days, and then AGP displaced it. And then AGP was replaced by PCI Express. And it was primarily made into a graphics port. And there's different flavors. There's a 16-lane port that's really long. There's a 4-port that's much, much smaller, and a 1x that is really small on your board. And you cannot take an old PCI card and put it in a PCI Express slot or do the opposite. They won't physically fit.
So PCI and PCI Extender, PCIe, are different formats.
No, not Extender. PCI Express.
PCI Express is for
mostly video, but you can get all kinds of cards. There are sound cards now that are PCI Express, RAID cards.
I've actually forgotten now. What is the PCIX?
That's more of a server technology. That was for 64-bit wide.
Okay,
PCI is a 32-bit.
And those work backward compatible with standard PCI cards.
No, well, you could not put a PCI Express or PCIX card into PCI, but you could put a PCI into a PCI. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So there's two flavors of PCIX, so that gets very confusing. Let's not go there.
Okay.
But for PCI Express, yeah, you can't. Even if you could fit a PCI card into that slot, it would not work.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ed.
But PCI Express is the latest standard, and all your motherboards are going to have this. So when you go buy a graphics card, especially.
And PCI Express is PCIe?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. So the longer slots that are usually black, or some odd color on a motherboard are going to be your PCI Express. And then the ones that are white.
The shorter white ones that are taller, physically, like taller off the top of the board, that's PCI.
So what we're talking about is inside your computer case, your motherboard desktop type computer. Inside there's a whole bunch of slots for cards you can add on. And the different formats, it used to be ISA.
Industry Standard Architecture.
Those were long and black, and you had to do a whole bunch of crazy...
Yeah.
Well, they started off short and black. They were only 8-bit to begin with.
But what you had to do a whole bunch of interrupt stuff. You had to manage a whole bunch of things.
Right.
And then we went to PCI.
Which is Peripheral...
Connection Interface.
Connection Interface.
And that is a white card, which is... The slots are white and not black.
Although then, in the interim, you had Visa as well.
Let's not get into Visa.
And EISA.
These are all video format stuff, right?
Yeah.
Visa was, EISA was simply extended industry standard architecture. It was used for high-speed hard drives and SCSI controllers.
So the PCI, then there's PCI-X, which we're not going to talk about, and then there's PCI Express, which is the new one.
PCI is pretty much a legacy port now. Yeah. I think motherboard manufacturers would love to get rid of PCI if they could, and you'll see that happen.
What about AGP?
Time. AGP's dead. That was replaced by PCI Express.
So PCI Express can be for any peripheral.
Yeah. You can still buy AGP cards.
Right. There was Visa, which was replaced by AGP, which then was replaced by PCI Express.
Acronym showdown.
No, Visa's old. That was AGP replaced that.
Right. That's what I said.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Visa was replaced
by AGP. But you can still buy AGP cards, but not new cutting edge. No one's making those. You have to go back like three generations.
And the sad part here is that the people who already know this are understanding why we're talking what we're talking about, and so not getting any value from this.
Not at all.
The people
who don't
already know this are going, what?
All you need to know is that you don't need to know most of this stuff at all. Because you can always email us and ask, and we'll tell you. Or call. And speaking of calling, we could probably take one more call if you'd like to call us with 476-2800 or toll-free. Oh, we have somebody? Or toll-free. Oh, let's go to Bruce then. We probably don't have time for anybody else. So Bruce from Seaside, welcome to Geek Speak, Bruce.
Well, great to be on the show. I have some comments about OpenOffice.org. I've been using it since version 2. OpenOffice is not as good as you think it is. It's better. It's very snappy.
That was tricky. You had me for a second.
Yeah. No, I'm very impressed. I've used it since the developer snapshot when they were sending that out. But it's very snappy. Got completely all the features you want. There's a few changes in the menus, but these are not things that people use all the time.
And if you're starting from scratch, you're not going to worry about changes.
If you're starting from scratch, you'll think it's the greatest thing that ever came down.
Well, if you move from like Word to use this for your Word, word processing, is it going to be difficult?
No, I go back and forth between the Microsoft suite and OpenOffice. OpenOffice does have two things that for me are killer applications. One is the ability to generate PDFs. And I can select the resolution that I want to generate them at.
So OpenOffice, Sean, there's your answer. You can make PDFs. What do you mean you can select the resolution?
You can select a lossless generation.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so you can have the documents are not quite as big.
A print. Okay. Yeah. Really? I'll have to try that out.
Yeah, that's one thing. The other thing is this inclusion of this thing called Calc. And Calc is a bunch of formulas. Where it really works well is this other part of it called Base. And what Base does, it gives you the ability to go through a connection and pretty much go into any database that you need to get into. And so you can use a word processor. You can embed a spreadsheet into it, generate a report from your database. And it's all done with OpenOffice.
Wow. I'd like to play with that.
So is there any features of OpenOffice that you wish... were there, that matched up with Word better? Or
they're pretty much all there. They're not quite the same. One of the things I do, I take screenshots and crop them down. That's not quite as convenient, but it's there.
Yeah.
Okay, a quick question. When you're talking about Microsoft Office, are you using the most recent version of Office, 2007?
No, I'm not. We tend to use an old one. Probably about 5 years old.
So I'd be really curious about a comparison of the newest version of OpenOffice with the newest version of Office.
Well, let's look.
I'm not interested because these modern. When Microsoft comes out with a new product, it's half the speed.
Yeah.
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 So my job is, I'm interested in getting my work done.
You know, it's interesting that I also take screenshots and crop them down using Photoshop. So, what method do you use in Ubuntu then? or
in
office? Yeah, well, with the, so you're just using OpenOffice in Windows.
I'm using it in Windows. I use it on my Linux boxes, but that's mainly for writing letters and stuff.
Do you do any image manipulation at all?
A little bit, but there's about half a dozen programs.
Yeah, that's true.
In Linux that are part of the distribution.
Yeah. Hey, and, Bruce, thank you so much for the call. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I'll need to fire it up and check it out.
Especially you, Sean, because you, of course, have all this, you know, you do a lot of word processing and really like know how to use Microsoft Word.
Yeah, the new version of Office, I think, is pretty good, actually.
So. Real quick, anybody, Ben, John?
We had an email come in. Yeah. John in Paso Robo sent a message about the printer. Mm-hmm. He says he's been using an Epson Perfection 4490 photo scanner. For scanning 35 millimeter and 2 1/4 inch slides. With success.
So what is that again? That,
the Epson Perfection 4490 photo scanner.
4490. Can someone, maybe Alex, can you put that up on the website as well? We're adding stuff to the website as we go. Well, let me tell you that GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a weekly hour-long radio quiz program. Each week on the radio, you can test your knowledge against some of the best and brightest in the news and entertainment world while figuring out what's real news and what's made up. On the web, you can play along, too. That's Wait, Don't Tell Me, Saturday at noon and Sunday at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. Hey, I want to thank all the geeks today. We had media dude Ben Jaffe in, available to do thumb wrestling, but did not actually have to do it. Ben, thanks for coming in.
Sadly. Yeah.
He's undefeated. Had no challengers.
And, of course, you got a whole slew of stuff. This is one of those things I want to mention, actually. We did this by sending a note to the 10 of us that are involved in GeekSpeak, that John had some gear. But you can also go to Craigslist. It's a great service. If you've got stuff that's sitting in your house and you don't really want it, but at the same point you don't want to throw it away, go up to Craigslist, make a post, put it up there. Some neighbor of yours will give you a call if you put your phone number in there or an email, and you can give it to them. It's a great, and sometimes you can even sell it to them. Anyway, we also had Sean Cleveland, John Tracy. Thank you for donating all that gear to Ben, and I really appreciate that. And Miles Elam, thank you also for being here, Miles.
Always a pleasure.
GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Borrego Solar, offering photovoltaic solutions that enable homes and businesses to be green and resource savvy by installing Sharp solar panels. New federal tax credits with state rebates may bring solar within reach. BorregoSolar.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP, Santa Cruz, KBDH, San Auto, streaming live and podcasting at KOSP.org.